If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, the word is out. They're gonna talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 665. One Night in Bangkok.
Nope, wrong movie. No.
Oh. And the world's your oyster? I get my kicks above the waistline, sunshine.
What is that from?
From the song One Night in Bangkok.
Oh, I was thinking of the really bad Mark Dukakis movie.
Ah, no. I know how much you love to think Dukakis.
That's true. That's true.
Got Dukakis on the brain.
He loves Dukakis.
Cannot get enough Dukakis.
That's why I watch Iron Chef.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Dukakis and fisting.
That's right.
Those
are his
two favorite things.
That's my search history.
So yeah. You really should have been watching Double Dragon.
Yeah, Only the Strong.
And Le Pacte Loup.
That's right.
But yeah, One Night in Bangkok from the play Chess.
Oh, from the play Chess.
Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
It was a musical.
The musical Chess.
Yeah. Well, it's musicals or plays.
Yeah, it all works.
Yeah, it's on a stage. Yeah, but yeah. It was made in the '80s. It was a weird thing. They came out with the soundtrack first, and like to try and generate revenue,
like a concept album.
Yeah, and then turn it into a play. But it toured. I mean, it played the Fox when I was a teenager.
No. It's all about the game of chess.
It's all about the chess tournament in Bangkok.
Oh, well, did it take place over one night?
Yeah, it did. Oh. I don't know. I don't remember. I haven't seen it since I was like 14. So,
what are we reviewing again? I forget at this point.
But it's an interesting play though. Like I just the whole thing behind it, you know.
Yeah.
But
cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Murray Head, who was on the Jesus Christ Superstar soundtrack, I believe.
As who?
I don't know. Oh. I just that was what they always said.
This is a riveting start to the episode.
That's his. That's their. He's also been on the Jesus Christ Superstar soundtrack. Yeah. That's like above his name.
Yeah, that was his claim to fame. Yeah.
Not as lead vocals, but just as like one of the backup guys.
He played a tree.
He was one of Jesus's robes.
But yeah, it was a Tim Rice musical. Like that's not nothing. He's a
no,
big
that's
deal.
True. That's not nothing. That's He's a big deal. I know who that is.
Yeah. So
yeah, but, Phantom of the Opera.
That's right.
Anyway, I guess let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. And quick shameless plugs. Don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you find your podcast. You can find us. While you're there, be sure and follow us so you never miss an episode. And maybe leave us a review. That's always helpful.
We got a rating.
Ooh.
So our ratings went up.
Well, that's good. Just because we got a rating doesn't mean they went up.
No, they went up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Phew. You can also... Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page and join the group if you want the easiest way to help us. It doesn't cost you a dime. Share an episode in your social media feed. People who were kind enough to share an episode this week, and I should preface this by saying I've been having issues again with Facebook showing me who shared an episode. So if I miss
you... Something tells me it's only going to get worse.
I know. So if I miss you, I apologize. It's not because we don't like you. It's because Facebook is being a... So here we go. Librarian Cynthia, Laura Connolly Quiddick, Ralph Tribble, Heather Sachs, Tammy Sherman Powers, Douglas Bolduc, Gabriel Lugo, Chris Valls, Phoenixville Morley, Zach Brown, but not that Zach Brown, Travis T. Witt, Epic Film Guys, Chris Williams, Jarpo.
Hey.
All right.
Which I loved his brothers, Jico and Droucho. Minorities Report, Geek to Me Radio, Ronnie Castle, Kathia Woods, In Session Film, Linda Wright, Spoiler Piece Theater, Keith Noakes, Ryan Terry from the Force of Crowd podcast, Invasion of the Remake, The Movie Journey podcast, Binge Movies, Chris Wilson, Matt Naglia, Cinema Recall, Victims and Villains, Bitchin' Boutique, which is a great name.
That's a good name.
Mike Marlowe, which your name's okay too, I guess.
The is Man- Mike Marlowe related to Aaron Marlowe?
I don't know.
One can only assume.
Oh, yeah.
The Manic Pixie Weirdo podcast, Film Rage, Ladies Fright podcast, All the Horror, Feelin' Film, and Mike and Oscar. So thank you very much. And if sharing an episode isn't being helpful enough for you and you like, how can I help them even more? Patreon.com/realspoilers. For $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content and you help us out a little extra, and we are appreciative.
And there's all kinds of Halloween stuff in the Patreon right now.
Nothing but.
Nothing but. There's a lot of it.
Yes. So anyway, there's all that. And let's dig in.
Man, did I love this movie. This is so... this might be my Malignant.
It's
this
cool.
This is so... Like, this was great.
Yeah, it's cool. I really liked it, too. I went into it super hyped.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't as good as I had hoped it would have been. Like, I liked it, though. You know, I think the film starts off really strong.
Yep.
And I think it's really good in the middle. And I think that third act... When it gets
with the reveal,
just all the ghosts and the movie was anxiety inducing and terrifying, and I was right there with the main character. And then when all those ghosts started popping up, it looked like something out of the Haunted Mansion or something. It just it made it feel that the horror went away for me.
Oh, that's interesting.
I just think they didn't quite nail all the ghost stuff, but I really
and
liked
you would
it.
Think that a guy who loves horror and kind of got his start in horror, right? Like Shaun of the Dead is like a rom-zom com.
I wonder if it's because it's 60s he went with the feel of Ghosts that was maybe a little bit more 60s.
Yeah. I could see might that. I mean, if when we get to the reveal of like what the ghosts are, that makes sense.
Yeah. And I liked it, but I did not love it. And I have a problem with its central conceit. I feel like it created a problem it didn't know how to solve, and so it gave the retroactive problem a different solution, which I didn't like.
Interesting. Hmm. But I thought the performances, though.
Oh, man.
I mean, it's a great looking movie. Like, it's a fun ride.
Yeah.
It's just, I think I
like this better than Baby Driver.
Yeah, I would say that.
Yeah, it's solid, and Edgar Wright, he has a brilliant style. Like his style is so unique, and he's so visual, in his storytelling, and so the movie does look great in the performances, though. Seriously, Thomasin McKenzie.
Say her name again.
Thomasin McKenzie.
Okay. I just want to make sure I hear it right. So I know how to say it.
I think that's how you pronounce it. But, she was in Jojo Rabbit, and then also Leave No Trace. I don't know. Did you guys see Leave No Trace?
I did not see Leave No Trace
with Ben Foster. Ben Foster.
Is she the daughter?
Yeah.
Oh,
she was really young in that. Yeah. But I mean, you know, it was several years ago, but they're out in the woods and like they're
like survivalists.
Yeah.
Right?
They're like on the lam and no one, you know, people are looking for them and they're moving all the time. It is such a good movie. And, you know, both their performances are excellent. So see that. But that's where I first saw her. And she's excellent. And then Anya Taylor-Joy.
I mean, she's kind of a given at this point.
Awesome. Yeah. She really draws you in, like that character.
One of them wasn't old.
Yeah, that's Thomasin McKenzie.
Okay.
Yeah. So Thomasin McKenzie was just in Old.
She's the sister in Old.
Yeah. She's going to be in something. I mean, she's getting a lot of work because, I mean, she's
Makes
her
sense.
Early stuff was
Jojo Rabbit, if you haven't seen it, is
Sure.
It is stellar. But she is stellar.
Yeah, those two, I mean, are really the two leads of this movie, and Thomas McKenzie even more so. And man, I mean, this movie lives and dies on her. I mean, her performance, and she is going through a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
and she grabs you right from the moment when this movie opens, you know. And oh, and the soundtrack, you can't. I mean that's the other star of an Edgar Wright movie, like James Gunn.
As I'm watching that, I was gonna bring that up. Is like when we had that conversation about James Gunn, we kind of forgot about Edgar Wright because we haven't seen him since Baby Driver.
Well, and this has been a long time since his last movie, but he's like James Gunn, they've got the same, they love music and they pull things that aren't so on the nose, and they're deep, you know, deep cuts and hits that you wouldn't necessarily realize. But his soundtrack for this movie sets the tone
big time
of the 60s so well.
Yeah.
And it's like big song, like really good song and big song after big song. Like he loaded this thing with music. Like,
yeah. And songs that I don't like, sometimes a James Gunn or a Quentin Tarantino, like that is built into his budget, right? Like there's a music budget.
Right.
And to me, Edgar Wright is able to pick, I think of like, in Shaun of the Dead, when they pick Don't Stop Me Now, mm-hmm. which is like, no, it's definitely not one of Queen's bigger songs,
right.
But it like in that, like it works there.
I love that song though.
It's a great song, but like it's not one you hear on the radio all that often.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like it's not one that gets played.
That's
regularly.
A great going out song. I remember when I was younger and I, you know, it's like that was like you're going out on Friday night. It's like that gets you amped up.
I
wonder if maybe it's a bigger hit in the UK.
Oh, maybe.
There's a lot of songs that, you know, are like that, that like,
that's a good point.
Might not be big hits here, but they were big hits there.
Yeah. But I mean, like, I just think that that's not as expensive as trying to get Bohemian Rhapsody.
But, you know, when this movie starts off, and I talked about this, I think I talked about this with Donald Sutherland. No.
Donald Sutherland.
Yeah. Well, you remember which one that is, right? He's not the guy in Halloween.
Oh, that's Donald Pleasance.
Yeah.
Yeah. I felt bad about that. I could not keep it together.
Yeah, I talked about this on our Invasion of the Body Snatchers episode with Donald Sutherland, an introduction to characters. I love it when a movie throws you in and introduces you to the character without it just being this like plain thing with a bunch of exposition. Okay, that's what this character is doing. This movie starts off with Ellie dancing around her room in a paper dress she's made. So clearly you're like, okay, she's a clothing designer. She makes her own dresses. She's made this.
Doesn't have a lot of money.
This beautiful dress out of newspaper. Yeah, doesn't have a lot of money. She's fun. She's bubbly. Her personality. Like, I just love how this movie throws you into it. You've got the great music. And right there, you're on the ground running like, okay, this character's cool. I like her. I relate to her. And the way he introduces her is really fun. And also, you get his style, his style and his flair.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the end of this song, when she's getting ready and packing her stuff and all that, which also shows you she's like getting ready to move and all this, but then she sees her mom in the mirror,
which I thought was a very creepy, like, so that's the thing is I think Edgar, there's a lot of like mirror work in this movie, and I think it's insanely impressive.
Yeah,
like
the stuff with the two of them,
like when she's walking on
the
steps,
like that is when you were like, that's some next level stuff.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I only wish there was more later because I was so impressed with it there.
I think of the scene where Sandy, where she's the other character, Anya Taylor-Joy. There's the scene where they're in a booth, right? And
and she's banging on the
Well, not even that, but mirror. Like they're moving together,
yeah.
Which I think is probably not the easiest thing to get right. But on the other end, you've got the other character who doesn't have, like, it's just a regular mirror for that guy. I was like, man, that is, I cannot even imagine.
I know how
like,
they did it.
Trying
he
to
has
figure
a mirror,
that out.
But she has, I guess, glass or something because she's banging on the other side of what is supposed to be a mirror. But
or is she even really there? Is it
that's
CGI?
The,
but,
right?
but it looks
I don't know.
So seamless.
But it does look,
Right. And
when they were dancing, it looked really good, too.
Yeah.
That was,
when it kept toggling back and forth.
That was insanely good.
That's the thing is that there's so much different work with mirror and switching the characters back and forth, and it looks so seamless.
Yeah.
And that's where, I mean, Edgar Wright, I still think he has the most interesting and seamless transitions of all time in any movie. I've never seen a movie do it better than Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
So
those scene transitions are next level. Have you seen that? And have you seen it lately?
I haven't seen it lately.
Oh,
but,
okay.
But
the way he goes between scenes is incredible. And next time you watch it, and it's a great movie, you should watch it every once in a while. But next time you get a chance to watch that movie, just watch. If you didn't notice it before, every time it goes from one like location to another, the transitions, they all move with the movie. Like it's not just a cut. It's not, you know, it's like the scene and the objects in the movie move into the next location. Yeah. It does it throughout the entire film.
If you go back and watch Shaun of the Dead, he's doing it there too.
Yeah.
Right. Like there's cars that move with him or, you know, the character, but
But Scott Pilgrim, and
he figured it out by Scott Pilgrim. Like he has that, whatever that is, he's figured it out.
It's an
budget. That could be it. Yeah.
But, and then plus, and that's a comic book movie.
Very much so.
And so,
that's the thing is we're so used to comic book movies looking a certain way where Scott Pilgrim looks like the comic.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's an amazing.
He brought
Brian
the comic
O'Halloran.
To life.
Is Brian O'Halloran? Brian Lee O'Malley.
So.
Brian Lee O'Malley.
the guy
from wasn't there that day.
Yeah, right. No, Brian Lee O'Malley has that. Those Scott Pilgrim books have a certain look.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where it's like, well, you're just going to make a comic, you know, like an adaptation. Yeah. But Edgar Wright was taking like scenes and pages and making them work on screen, which is insane.
Those things don't always translate well, like or exactly, but he got the feel and the look of that movie while still doing a live action movie.
Yeah.
But he translated it perfectly.
Yeah.
So the point is Edgar Wright is great at those visuals. And so you get that throughout the film where you're just like, man, this guy really knows how to make a movie look, especially in the first two thirds. But I like how you get that introduction to Ellie and then you get stopped in your tracks when you see something's off here.
Yeah.
And you see her mother in the mirror. And yeah, I mean, characters can like, if they've lost a loved one, they can see them or think of them, but there's something about the way like the music stops and it's more ominous and you're like, this is going to be something.
Well, he kind of does that. I know we're probably just gonna keep referencing his other movies, but that's what if you go back and watch Shaun of the Dead, that those opening credits are every character that he focuses on. Is a character that we come back to see as a zombie later,
right?
Like you get the Mary in as the checker, and then that's the first zombie we encounter. Just so it's like you get that all the time, but he does have this knack for like uncomfortable horror. So that scene when she's walking by the mirror and we see it stops and there's this other person in the mirror, you're like, whoa. Yeah. And then
when she
moves,
but then she's not in the mirror. Like the way he does it, it's really interesting because she's there. And then I think if I remember correctly, it's been like a week since I've seen this movie, but Ellie's body,
she crosses the mirror
and she vanishes.
Yes.
Her mother's, image vanishes. So it's not like you just cut back and she's not there. What she is. And then it transitions away.
Right.
And so, it sets up that this is something, obviously she's only seeing this and there's something kind of haunting about this. And, and later on we find out. So like she lost her mother. Her mother died. And
when she was like seven.
Yeah. And it was like the pressures of moving to the big city. And so in this next scene, she's talking to her grandmother and the grandmother's kind of weary, like, it's a big transition from where we live and it was too much for your mother to handle. So we find
out. Do they say that as like it was the mom had like a mental break and that's what happened?
I believe so. Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't sure. Like they definitely
killed herself, right?
Yes.
She killed herself. And I got the feeling that the daughter had some,
that's what I,
and so like that's my issue with the film is I feel like they set it up to be that she's having some sort of psychotic episode and then they steer to like, no, it's all supernatural. And I'm just like, that's to me when the answer to your mystery is like supernatural, that feels like a cheat. Like if you start out with the premise of your movie is about supernatural, right? Like if I go into The Exorcist, I know from the jump that I'm seeing a supernatural movie.
Sure.
And so I go along for the ride, even though I don't believe in that stuff. Right. But if you show me a movie, about this kid who has mental issues and, I don't know, for some reason, the movie that I think of is that We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Mm. I mean, that's a good call.
And if you get to the end of the movie and you're like, oh, but he was possessed, you'd be like, F this movie.
Then you lost everything that you were just trying to say about
him. Sure.
Right.
That makes sense.
And I think that's why it loses me, too, because you get all the ghosts and stuff. I think that's part of what I'm trying to.
If they had set it up to where she has this sort of connection to the supernatural, not that maybe it's a mental disorder, right? It's a legit connection, and now she's in this world, and she's in this room where all these people have died, and of course that's gonna like just peg her in ghostometer in the red,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
Then I'd be like, oh, okay. I think I would have been on board for this movie in a way that I'm not. Overall, it's a good movie, and I enjoyed the ride. it's the central conceit of the film. I felt a little lied to, right? Like, the whole time I'm trying to figure out what's going on, and if it was just like, oh, ghosts, I'm like, oh, well, if I knew I was seeing a ghost story, like, then there's not a puzzle to unravel. It's just ghosts. Okay.
Yeah.
But instead, they're like, oh, it's mental illness. No, it's ghosts.
But then it's not just ghosts, right? Then it's something else completely. So you get, like, these three different, to your point, yeah, you've got a story where it's like, maybe she is having a mental break,
right,
because she's over, you know, maybe it is these ghosts. But then they get to the real part of the story and you're like, wait.
But I think, that it, and this is the problem where it's, this is the stuff that doesn't get executed as well as you would hope, is that he's leaning on the mental break as the, almost like a red herring. It's like,
right,
he's doing it so the audience is like, is she really seeing this stuff, or
sure,
is she having a mental break, right? And it ends up that obviously this stuff was really happening, so it is a supernatural thing. But
or
it
could
just,
it be both?
Well, yeah, but then that's the thing, is it's messy. It's just, it's too much. Like, they don't follow the threads of the mental health thing enough. Like, they drop it and they're like, it's ghosts. Like, to Tom's point.
Yeah, like, I think it would have been, like, I feel like this script needed, like, one more draft.
Yeah,
you know?
Something to connect the two, because there's no piece in between mental
right,
break
and
ghosts.
I think maybe a way to play it and still get largely the same movie is if they had played it more like she has this supernatural ability that she's interpreting as a psychotic break, right? Like, she thinks this is a mental illness issue and it's not.
Right, and everyone else around her
and
thinks
everyone,
it is.
Because obviously, yeah, because nobody's going to
believe
in the,
that she's
going to be like,
ghosts.
Oh, you probably see ghosts.
But that's basically what they're doing. That's the problem, is there's no connective tissue
right,
to where they say that or yeah, write or spell it out for the audience or the characters. Because
and I don't
that's
mean
what they're
that
doing.
They
the granny, the Graham is like, are you okay? What's happening? And she's thinking this girl's having
Does
a mental
she,
break.
Right.
Did she say, she definitely said at one point, like, are you still seeing her?
Yeah.
Right. But does she ever make a reference to, like, that her mom kind of had the same thing? Like, that there was a similar.
Well, that's what makes you wonder
two?
Is did yeah, the mom have the ability to see
that's
ghosts
how,
and stuff? Because that was.
And that's how I was interpreting that. Yeah. The mom had a similar, had the same. Whatever's going on with the daughter,
the
mom
had
the same.
The shinning.
Yeah.
You want to get sued?
No, I said the shinning.
Yeah, right.
That's why I said it. But that's the thing.
Hey,
that's where there's it just needed that connective tissue, because I think that's a much more interesting story, is that the mom had a mental break and it was too much for her and she ended up killing herself. And then now the daughter also inherited this. And it's like, oh, come to find out, it wasn't mental illness. She had this supernatural ability.
Right. Latent ability.
And you know what I mean? To investigate it more like that, but they never even go back to, like, her figuring that out, or to say, like, this is what my mom had, like, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I think that
yeah,
there's something missing there. So anyway, so she packs her bags,
heads to the big city. She has gotten into this, I guess, I assume this prestigious, mm-hmm, like London
school of fashion.
She meets her, you know, she's very homely. She's dressed very conservatively. She meets her.
I don't think she's homely.
Yeah,
I think homely.
She's just.
Well, I mean,
she's
like
from the country.
She's
from,
yeah, yeah, she's the big city is
country
not
country bumpkin moving to the.
Yes, that's yeah. I don't not homely.
Homely
is not, you know what I
she's
mean.
She's quite lovely.
She is quite lovely.
Again,
yeah. So she meets her new roommate Jocasta, because
man, did she do a good job?
She
playing
was great.
A B with a capital
yeah. Oh, yeah.
B.
She was
that
fantastic.
Character, if you didn't hate her,
oh. She, you know, backward comments. She's like, oh no, you know,
backhanded compliments. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Where Ellie's like, oh, I made this myself, and yeah, she was like,
oh, isn't she sweet? Here we are in our designer dresses, and she comes in something she made herself.
She made herself, and her, yeah, of course, the other people are.
They're mean.
She's
girls.
She's the top. Yeah. Jocasta's the top dog.
They're straight out of mean. Like,
yes,
these are the mean girls.
Yeah. Ellie doesn't fit in well,
yeah,
you know. There's the scene where they're talking about Ellie's mom dying, and she was like, oh, I was seven. And then Jocasta's like, well, I had a great uncle that died, and it really
She's like,
me.
My mom died too. And she's like, my mom. And then, but then Ellie's mom died younger.
Right,
and then
right.
She's like, oh, and then when she found out her mom committed suicide, and then she's like, oh, I had an uncle who committed suicide.
Yeah.
She's very competitive.
If you caught a fish this big, she caught a
yeah,
fish
yes,
this big.
And I mean, so to their credit, like, see, the writing of that, I think, is fantastic
yeah,
to
yeah,
show how horrible Jocasta is. Like, that kind of thing, those character traits they're writing.
Yes.
make you hate that yes. character because yeah. because you like Ellie, and again, since the beginning, she seems like such a sweet, wholesome, nice person and good person, and then you get her set up with this roommate who's awful, and she just keeps digging
the
in
worst,
worse and worse, and so like their first night there, they go out, a big party,
yeah, they go to the Toucan, which I was like, man, if I were still drinking, that bar would be my spot. I like the basement of that bar yeah. all day. Man. That looked great.
But instantly she realizes the big city is
this
like
is not for
way
her.
Too much
yeah.
for her.
This is not her. Not yet, at least. So they get back home, and Ellie is kind of like under the covers, and she's got her very prominently placed Beats headphones that we see all the time.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Jocasta busts in with a boy, and they start, you know, doing what you do. And then Ellie has to, like, walk out of the room covered with her big comforter and like leans up against the wall. And then she just kind of like the story progresses, and Ellie quickly realizes that this is not going to work out.
She meets this guy that seems nice, like a
yeah,
more genuine
yeah.
guy who, you know, who we
but
find
but she's
out
also not interested in.
Yeah. Well,
initially.
She's smart though. Like, so we skipped over when Ellie gets to the big city, she's immediately dropped in and meeting these men,
you know what? Yes, you're absolutely right, and it's I was going to mention that is that there's this weird foreshadowing as to what we're going to get going yeah. forward, where she does meet that,
which is like, obviously very on purpose.
Yes.
She moves to the big city,
meets
and
the creepy
granted,
cabbie.
She's got to be careful of people, whatever, blah blah blah, and then yeah, she's thrown right into it. The cabbie's like, "Where you live? Oh, I'm sure I'll see a lot of you." And she's already feeling. And when he says, "Like,
yeah,
are you a
like,
model?"
Ugh.
He's looking at her legs in the mirror. So I mean, instantly she realizes how creepy people can be, and she's nervous. And the horror elements. I have to say, it reminded me of just that one scene in Eighth Grade in the back of the car.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like, were
totally.
You one of the most terrifying scenes,
especially
of that
because
year.
Of that movie, like, you honestly have no clue. Like, most movies, you're like, they're not going to go there. Yeah. But this movie, I was like, oh, they might go there.
They might go there.
But yeah, so, like, it reminded me of how much anxiety I had just during that one scene. But Ellie has a lot of scenes in this movie where Edgar Wright ramps up the tension. And, like, this is one of the most anxiety-inducing movies I've watched in a
agree.
While.
I completely
He plays
agree.
Up those thriller elements, and I mean, it really had me like.
She's also got like a very expressive face, like she and her eyes yeah. she's able to do things with her eyes that I think are that ramp that up even more. Mm. She's got very big eyes when she wants to
yeah.
have them.
She's and like a anime character.
She really is. Yeah. And like when she's seeing certain things, like that scene where she's like peeking around the corner
yeah.
to see if the
you know, that's a good point
gone.
That I hadn't thought about. So much of this movie lies in her ability to look at something and mm-hmm. react.
Yeah.
You know
that's
what I,
mean? What I mean. Like, her performance in this movie, it really does land on, like, can she deliver? And she does. Like,
oh,
she
yeah.
is phenomenal.
Big time.
But so she's in the big city. She's seeing all these people and these men who are creepy, and obviously, and then she sees,
what's that character's name?
Terrence Stamp outside the bar.
General Zod.
He's awesome.
Great. Honestly, I forgot that he was like around,
yeah.
and then he walks out of the bar, and I was like, "Is that?"
I know.
I said,
"I did the same thing." I'm like, "Terrence Stamp is in this movie. He's awesome." But he's so commanding. His presence, just the looks he gives, you're just like,
yeah.
"God, he has that like you know that thing." And so anyway, so she's seeing all these men, and she's weary of him. But you know, at the party that like they went out all night, and they brought all these people back and had a huge party in their dorm. But then she meets this guy, and he is John, I think is
John.
His name.
Yep.
And he's played by one of the guys in Attack the Block.
Yeah. Yeah.
You'd recognize him, Michael Aho. I think
there's no need for name calling.
And
that's getting a sequel, right?
Yeah, it
yeah,
is.
Good
yeah.
for them.
So you know, you notice like, so, okay, this guy seems like he's nice and has good intentions. We find out he's a classmate, and then that develops into a relationship that we'll see later on. But it's like, okay, this guy's good. And it's a cute moment where he's holding this Coke, and she bought it from the convenience store after the taxi driver incident, put her name
and,
on the
well,
fridge.
Well, no, Jocasta, she opens, which I thought was another great scene, where Jocasta, Ellie opens the fridge, and
everything
is
Jocasta
labeled.
On.
Yeah, like and almond
like, oh,
milk and
here's
Greek
a little
yogurt.
Spot for yours, and she writes her name on it. But then the guy's drinking a Coke, and he's like, oh, crap, this is yours, isn't it?
Like, she was like, finish it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And anyway, so it's a nice little moment between them, and you can see he's genuine and whatever. He's like, all right, see you later. But but yeah, she's like, I'm not doing this. No.
Right.
So she wakes up late for school the next day because she was up all night with all this noise and ruckus.
Yeah.
And she finds a thing on the ground.
Walking through like the commons. A ruckus.
Yeah.
Walking through like the commons, and she finds, like you said, like a little notice, you know, and she picks it up and she calls, and this woman
apartment
answers.
For rent, women only.
Women only.
You know.
And
that's
not...
where we find out this is a Bosom Buddies reboot.
Who knew?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, R.I.P.
Peter Scolari.
Peter Scolari, yeah, that just passed away.
Also on Newhart.
That's right. That's
maybe
right.
The most successful show to get a soft reboot and live.
Oh, that's probably makes sense.
If you look at season one, it looks not similar at all. They like do a complete gutting of that show between seasons one and season two and
figured
have to
it
rethink
out.
It, and then they figure it out, and it lasts for like another 7 years.
Man, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Good
like,
for them.
It's like The Office situation. Like
that
the
first season.
Got canceled
yeah.
that
yeah.
first season.
But like, and The Office definitely made some corrections, but like, they like just like... went
like
through
a
into
different
redline characters. They're like, we're getting rid of you. We're getting rid of you. We're getting rid of you. We're bringing
okay.
in these people. Like it's like they, I mean, almost recast the
we're
entire.
We're going to call the same thing.
Like
but
it comes back
different.
And like the only characters you basically have left are Bob Newhart and his wife. Everybody else is different. Yeah.
Yeah. So she goes and this is where we meet Diana Rigg, which is her last
yeah.
performance.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
Yeah. I didn't realize she was in this movie.
I didn't realize it either.
Yeah. I'm like, whoa. And I think it's great casting for the reveal later. I just
yeah.
think the casting
because
is
she's
spot
so
on.
Good.
And she's so good, but I mean, I'm just saying, like, look wise, it's just I was catching on to things because of the look. Where I'm just like, well, she kind of looks like the
she
thing.
Does kind of.
I think it's good casting.
I think it yeah. was. It, we didn't. Well, okay. Well, we'll do that later.
Yeah.
And she says she's like, I've had people leave before, so I need this X amount of money here, X amount of
she's
money
no
here.
Nonsense.
She is
she's
very
your
no,
no
nonsense.
Nonsense landlord. You're home by 8, no boys after 8, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, just the rules.
No,
are,
there's, yeah, no curfew,
rule.
But like no boys out upstairs.
No boys
after
8. You know, she's, you know, I want the rent up front, this. Is this going to be too much for you? Because these are the rules.
She was
yeah.
like,
no,
if you like
in.
The D, you got to be done by
7:45. 7:45 and you got to go.
Yeah.
Got to
Dukakis
go.
Isn't coming over after 8.
Yeah, Mark Dukakis is not coming over.
Giving him time to clean up.
That's right. You know, nice.
Oh, quick callback. I looked it up. Don't Stop Me Now went to 86 in America, but it went to 9
there
in
we go.
The UK.
That makes total sense.
Well, we did them wrong because it's a
that's
great
a,
song.
That
should have been
song.
Way
yeah.
higher.
So, and she agrees, right? Like, this is everything. She is way into, like, 1960s London, and this apartment is very 1960s.
So she listens.
It's
the,
old
the grandmother
school.
Gave her all her records. So if you're wondering, like, okay, this is a modern movie. Why does she like all these 60s music?
Yeah, because, like, even the mom should have been, like,
right.
in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So they show you, I mean, they explain it right up front. She's like, the grand's like, you can take all these records. She's like, no, they're yours. She's like, nope. And I like it. It's a cute line where she says something like, no. She's like, I got you hooked on them, so to take them away wouldn't be right. You
right,
know?
Right.
So it explains why she loves this era so much. For you know, being the age that she is, because that would have been 60 years later. Like,
yeah.
That's a
oh yeah,
really,
big time.
Yeah. But anyway, so she loves the old timey the era of London in the 60s. And she's listening to the music, and here's where we get our first like supernaturally twisty type thing where
yeah.
you know
she
like,
goes she turns on a record, goes to bed, and then wakes up. In 1960s yeah. London.
And it's
gotta,
a cool transition, too, though, because she pulls the sheet over her head.
That was very cool.
And the sheet is never ending. Like,
right.
It's like a tunnel.
Right.
So she goes, but then she comes out, she's at the other end.
Yes.
It's really cool
yes.
transition. She's at the end of the tunnel, but then she's at right next to the camera at the end of the tunnel.
It's a very cool
and
move.
She gets out of bed, and there's this light. Do you remember what the light said? There was something about I don't
well,
know.
I mean, she walks. She walks out to a theater and it's playing Thunderball.
No, but the flashing light. There's a mark.
Oh, it's
a
bistro. It
okay.
says bistro.
Oh, that's
it's
where
red
it is.
And, it's red and blue.
Yeah.
It's
so it flashes. You know. And so this is also we talked about with Malignant, the giallo.
There's
this
a lot.
Is Edgar Wright's giallo.
A little bit. Yeah.
With the red lighting. You know.
Yes.
I mean, that's he lights a lot of it in red. And there's this big red flashing light outside her room, which that would be annoying trying to go to bed.
I mean, if
a
you're
fluorescent,
yeah,
light
like
outside.
Right outside. Yeah, I was like, pull those curtains.
Yeah, it makes a really cool, really cool imagery. But anyway, so she wakes up, goes downstairs, and yeah, and there it is, Thunderball.
Which man, I saw that poster. I was like, fuck yeah,
that was cool.
Oh, it was
I
so
read.
Good.
I didn't read the article, but I saw the headline that I guess Quentin Tarantino and somebody else stepped in to help him get the rights to use that poster.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Are they buddies?
Well, Quentin Tarantino introduced him to the song Last Night in Soho. That's how he even discovered it.
Oh, really?
The reason why it's called Last Night in Soho is Quentin Tarantino introduced him. And then Tarantino's like, well, if you're going to use this, you really have to thank the person that introduced me to it. And so he put her name in the thank yous, too. Okay, and she was, like, ecstatic about it. Because he's been doing the podcast circuit, which I always love when people...
That's fun.
He was on Comedy Bang Bang.
Was he really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Talking to Scott about this stuff. And so anyway, so he thanked Tarantino and then thanked this other person that told him.
They seem like they would be buddies.
Yeah.
They're kind of like two peas in a separate pod, right? Like, their movies...
Flip sides of the same coin.
I think is probably a much better...
With the music and the film influences and And still, like, I mean, I know that Tarantino isn't as much comedy, but he has his moments where, like...
I think there's some comedy moments
that are obviously very understated in his movies, but there's some very funny stuff that he does.
Yeah. But so she wakes up in 1960s London.
The cars, the styles, everything, the music.
The
costuming, the set designer.
This should probably be nominated for something.
Yeah, I mean, visually and on a technical level, this movie is aces.
Yeah,
it's a great looking movie. But this is, I think, my favorite scene in the entire movie. What? I wish we got more like this. It's just the whole thing of her going into the club, and then walking down the hallway, and then seeing Sandy in the mirror, played by Anya Taylor-Joy, who's mesmerizing in her own right. I mean, she talk about an anime character. I think she's the one that has the eyes that
was she
like Amanda Seyfried has the eyes that are so unique. And
she was in Split.
She was the one that was in Split. She was in that X-Men stuff.
She was in New Mutants.
She was in
New Mutants. The one where she was like the alien?
Oh, she was an alien.
Is it?
I don't remember.
My stepmother is an alien.
No, that's Kim Basinger. I think.
I don't remember.
She's Plan in some... 9 from Outer Space.
Yes, that was it.
Yeah.
She's in something like, you know.
Okay.
The one with it's a Blumhouse movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Halloween.
That was it.
she plays Mike Myers.
Mike Myers.
Did I say Michael? Mike Myers, which is the mask from Baby Driver.
Yeah, see? Exactly. It's all coming full circle.
That's right.
But she's mesmerizing and is so cool in this role, and especially in this scene. So Ellie is this wholesome, sweet country character, you know, innocent, right? I think you'd say she's very innocent, a little naive, right? And then so she goes and she sees the life of Sandy, and Sandy is confident and beautiful. And the way that her body language, the way that Sandy moves and acts so confident and everything is like everything that Ellie wants. And she wants to be confident, and she gets to live vicariously through this other character. And I think she plays this cool, confident boss, gets what she wants lady. She walks into that place like she owns it, walks down the staircase. They flip spots again seamlessly.
It's very cool.
Yeah, she...
That mirror work is amazing.
I know. She touches the mirror, but she does it in the way they do throughout the film with that little flick.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yep.
And then it cuts back from the mirror of Anya Taylor-Joy, and then it pans back and Anya Taylor-Joy's out of the mirror.
Right.
The next time they cut back, Ellie's in the mirror. She walks on the staircase and they mirror that with the two actors going down.
Yeah.
And she walks in that club like she talks to the bartender. I want to talk to the owner. She
blows right past that creepy old guy.
Then, we get into we've got creepy old guys again, which is follows throughout the movie. These men.
Which also like men in the 60s. Well, men in general, I guess.
But like in the 60s, it would have been worse. And not only would it have been worse, but these men in the 60s were... really grew up in the 40s.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's
it's even worse.
It's yeah.
Yeah.
But like I said in my written review, I'm like, this movie really shows how, especially during that time period, that men would use and abuse women like complete objects, right? And I get what you want, you know, just
you gotta
do
this.
And so it's really creepy. She, you know, pushes him aside, walks up there like, I want to talk to the owner. I'm an aspiring, you know, singer. I want to sing at your club, you know? And this is where we meet Matt Smith.
Matt Smith.
Who, man, talk about creepy dudes. This character, I mean, he plays this character so well.
Yeah. He is so charming.
Because, he's so...
From Jump Street.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you're like, okay. Like, I could see, like, him being... I get him being infatuated with her. Like, she is unlike any... She is... They've got her dressed unlike any other woman in the club, right? Mm-hmm. She's wearing this bright pink, like, flowing... 60s style dress. Yeah. No other woman.
She walks in like she owns the place. Looks like a movie star with the wind blowing in her hair.
Blonde hair, long blonde hair. Yeah. So like they've already singled her out in this club, and it makes sense that Matt Smith's character, Jake.
Yeah, Jake.
Jake would be taken with her, like walks away from another woman to go talk to her.
And I think this is smart casting because he's so charming and charismatic.
Yeah, you need somebody that can toggle.
That flip.
Have we seen him play a good guy yet?
Doctor Who?
I mean, besides Doctor Who.
That's it.
But, I guess you can't get much more.
But man, when they flip the switch, it really just pulls the rug out from under you because you want to like this character. You're like, this is charming. What a meet cute. And what if they go on this thing, you know, where, you know, they're dancing. And then again, the transitions between the two of them. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the old guy comes in like, okay, I want to dance with her. And
punches him in the face.
Calls her, you know, I can't remember whatever, slaughter or whatever. You know, just calls her whatever.
Mean things.
Yeah. And he punches him and then him and his friends chase them. And it's this really exciting, like something out of Aladdin, you know, when Aladdin and Jasmine are running away. It seems like it follows the same kind of thing. And you're like, wow, these two are great. And he's like, you need a manager if you're going to make it in this town. I can get you in places. And so they become a couple and also a manager, you know, whatever duo.
And then Ellie wakes up.
Yeah.
Right. And so now she's inspired. Mm-hmm. So and that comes through in her work. Right. So she designs the dress that she sees Sandy wearing. Mm-hmm. And like even the teacher's like, holy
God.
Like, this is insanely good. Like, this is really good.
And this is, like, the time period she loves. This is the life she wants. She wants to live in the 60s. And she finds out she has this kind of, you know, magic wardrobe that will transport her when she goes
to bed. So she is now infatuated with Sandy. And not in, like, a weird, well, kind of in a weird way. Because she immediately goes out and dyes her hair blonde to look like Sandy. She buys the same.
Like Sandy's her muse.
Kind of, yeah. I was like single. She kind of single white female it a little bit. But like then she goes and buys like the leather jacket that Sandy had bought. And I do like where the gal was like $325. And she was like, what?
Yeah, those are pounds. Those are
right. Yeah, so that was pounds. Yeah.
Yeah, so it, yeah, like that's probably more like $500 or $600. Yeah.
And she was like, all right. And then
it flashes to the bar where they went like, you know, I need a job.
And I do love those were the kind of bars that I loved, right? We're just like I just wanted a bar, a stool, and like, that's it. That's all I needed.
Yeah. And Dukakis.
And Dukakis is sitting next to me.
But I like this.
I would prefer it.
It's a very no-nonsense little hole-in-the-wall pub. And
I love the Irish guy where he's like, are you Irish? And she was like, no. He's like, well, too bad. It's like, and she was like, what? He's like, I'm just kidding. Go downstairs. Yeah.
And you know, and this lady that works there, she's just like, what do you want? And she's like, I need a job.
And she's like, can you pour a beer? And she's like, no.
It's very funny. I like the dialogue and the banter between them. But then like the next day, she wants
But Terrence Stamp is at the bar.
Yeah.
So immediately I'm like, oh. It's Jake, right? Like that's immediately
what
I
want
thought.
You to think. That's exactly what they want you to think. I mean, as the movie goes on, that's what they want.
Because I think that's also really good casting because I could see Terrence Stamp look. Unfortunately, we know what Terrence Stamp looked like when he was younger.
Yeah.
But Matt Smith does kind of resemble a younger version of this.
And people get older, and then they have
and your
beards
face changes.
And,
yeah, and
but
your,
the, with
your,
the beard
your
and stuff, it's like okay, but you could see it. But she saw him before. She sees him again. You're getting really weird vibes from this
big
guy.
Time weird vibes.
And then she goes to bed like early, right? Isn't she trying to get the bed?
Well, he says he was like, "Do I know you?" And she was like, "Do I know your mom?" And she was like, "No."
Oh, this is the almost get hit by the car.
Yes, where they're kind of going back and forth. Where now, like, the Terrence Stamp character starts to like. You know, he hands her the picture that she had drawn and like so and we'll find out later that Terrence Stamp knows people. You know what I mean? So she rushes home and goes back to bed. And this is where
picks up where
Ellie
like,
is taken. John, Jake.
Jingleheimer?
Schmidt.
Yeah.
Jake takes Sandy to the Riviera Club. Mm. And, you know, she's like, get up there and sing. And she sings an amazing, amazing rendition of Downtown.
Yeah. Just, you know, just no music. Or
no,
anything. Just,
acapella, yeah. the whole thing.
And they're like, you'd make a great hooker.
Yeah.
I know. That's kind of
where
it is.
But this is where, like, I really like how, I mean, this is the commentary. And obviously this isn't good what they're doing. But it shows you how these women of that time period would be set up.
Yeah.
To like, okay, yeah, you're going to get a job here and perform and
well, and they
kind of
slow walk you into it, right? Like, they put her in the chorus and she's already, like, feels demeaned being in the chorus. She didn't think that's what they were telling her.
Right.
But it's like, okay, this is a means to an end, and people start in choruses. That's not unusual.
Not unusual.
Like
at
so,
all.
They kind of like they kind of just slowly turn up the temperature on the water she's about to boil in.
Yeah. Right.
But like that's the thing is she auditions, she does great, and then they're both like, oh my god, yeah, she's really something. So she thinks she's going to show up at the club the next night and be a headlining act.
Right.
Nope. She's a burlesque dancer.
And I really liked the weird puppeting type. It was a cool, like, the costumes.
Yep.
And the look of it all, and it, like, it was a really
cool. As soon as they showed the crowd, I was like, "Oh, this isn't good. It's all men,
right?
All men. Because the club, suits, and they're all
the club that we had the first time, the first night, is a pretty good mix.
It was a date night.
It was a date night,
and this is a room full of men in chairs. There are no tables. Like, mm-hmm. I'm just like, oh, that's not
this is bad.
Yeah. So yeah, and then from here we find out it's bad news. Jake is really trying to
That's basically what he is.
And we see the guy from the club that he punched the night before
They're joking with each other.
So you're like, oh, this was a setup to get.
I don't know if it was a setup as much. It was like Jake trying to saying that I'm in charge of this. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't know. To
asserting
me,
asserting his dominance.
Do you think it was a work? I thought it was weird that he was so jovial.
No, I agree. Yeah. I think he'd definitely be interpreted that way. It's also like, boy, that's a pretty convoluted plan.
Yeah, to get punched in the face.
And to be like, here's this girl that walks in. You be a jerk.
But it's a perfect setup. Yeah. He was her white knight. He saved her.
Right.
And so if that was a setup, which I interpreted with them joking around, she's like sees it, or Ellie does from, because Ellie's on the wings, or in the wings.
She's not really in control, but she's kind of. I mean, she's in
not
Sandy's body, but she's not in control.
But I don't. Yeah, I guess the way they show it, I don't see it like she's in Sandy's body. It always looked like she's in the wings to me. Doesn't it look like Ellie's kind of?
I don't know, because they pivot to where, like, it goes from him dancing with Sandy to him dancing with Ellie. So, like, they do kind of try to have their cake and eat it, too.
Right, sometimes.
It's like a passenger in Sandy's body.
Yeah, but a lot of times we see Ellie, like, across the room watching Sandy. Mm-hmm. So
they do both.
Exactly. We see that she, like, we see Ellie watching Jake and joking with the guy that he punched earlier, and it's like, this is a terrible situation.
This is bad.
And then from here on, we find out she introduces him to these guys, and he's like, hey, you're going to leave with him. And she's like, what?
I'm sorry. No, I'm not.
They're in a relationship. Like, she likes Jake, and she's not thinking that she's going to be passed around. He's like, if you want things to get done, this is what you do.
And that's it. And like that kind of becomes her life, is she becomes a prostitute. Yeah. And like her career never takes off. She kind of gets into drugs and booze, trying to dull things out.
And it's heartbreaking. It's horrible.
It is heartbreaking.
You see how talented this woman is. And I think that, this is the kind of stuff that did happen in the 60s.
For sure.
To women. And
I think it's probably still happening.
Well, right,
it's
right.
Not
of,
in dance halls.
Of course. Of course. Yeah. But,
hotel rooms.
But the way they show it and introduce you to these characters that you care about, and then you see what Sandy's going through and how talented she was and how she was ready to be a star and had what it took and everything, and then she was pushed into this life. Mm-hmm. And, it's horrible. So it's to watch her go through, and to her credit, Anya Taylor-Joy's performance as well. Like,
big time.
Watching her having to go through this stuff.
That's the thing, is like her character is so confident and so demand, like, she's demanding that you look at her.
Yeah.
And then halfway through this movie, that light is kind of out.
She's broken. That's hard to watch.
I think when we get to the line from a certain character where they were like, yeah, somebody did die in that room.
Yeah.
That's a good line.
It is. And it is heartbreaking. So like the performances by both of them. Wow.
Yeah. So while all of this is going on in Sandy's world, Ellie's world is also starting to like crumble, but not crumble. Right. Like
she's seeing what happened to this woman that was her muse. Like Tom said, Ellie's life was going great because she had this inspiration and she wanted to make it big as a fashion designer. Like Sandy was going to make it big as a performer, and she's seeing all this that she loves. But now she watched this person that she cares about, her life falling apart.
Well, so she's still working, right? Like she's still going to work. She's still the teacher is still not infatuated, but like impressed with her skills. So she's this dress is starting to come together. And then while she's dreaming one night, like what she perceives to be a murder. She thinks that Jack kills Sandy because Sandy has refused to go along.
Right? Jake.
What did I say? Jack.
You said Jack.
Jake.
Jingleheimer.
Schmidt. Sandy has refused to go along with this anymore. And Matt Smith's character said, we're done. And
you see this scene that almost like Gone Girl, but
it's very much Gone Girl,
where there's blood
everywhere,
and a knife, and it's crazy, and it's lit by the reds,
blankets,
and
the reds
blues,
and the blues, yeah,
and that this is that giallo lighting, and with the blood and everything, and it's gory.
And that's the thing is if you go back and watch Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead, Edgar Wright has a really good handle on gore,
mm-hmm.
right? He zombie violence, you know, and gore, and then there's some stuff in. I can only think of that scene with Timothy Dalton with like the steeple like going through the bottom of his chin, and he's like, "Oh," like a very good scene. So yeah, there is some gore here that is very good. Right, it's well done. But it is very gory. Blood is everywhere. She wakes up, goes to report.
She's freaked out now because she's like, "Oh my god, someone was murdered in this room." She goes down to the old lady, right, the landlady,
Miss Collins.
Yeah,
yeah. And Miss Collins is like, "Nobody was murdered in there. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. There's been a lot of girls that have been there.
So I'm sure someone's bound to have died. These are old.
She was like,
someone died in every room.
Sandy and." Yeah. The woman's like, she even says, she's like, when I bought this place cheap. Like, mm-hmm. There's a lot of memories here. Like, I'll never sell it, blah, blah, blah. So she goes, Ellie goes to the cops, and the cops are like, you're bat crazy.
Yeah. Well, you know, the guy is, and this is another, like, you know, believe women. I think this is another commentary on.
That's a good point.
You have a male and a female police officer.
But in that cop's defense. Right, like that story comes in, and you're just like,
"I know,
yeah." Like
it's
I think
the processing of it, it's afterwards.
If
stuff. Yeah.
It's supposed to be a commentary on believe women, it's a bad one.
Yeah,
right. Like
because the story,
because it's like if anyone, male or female, comes in and says, right. "I had a dream about a murder
in the
from
60s.
60 years ago,
I
but I don't know who it was, and I don't know, but believe them." Like, I'm sorry, but that's dumb and a waste of resources of actual crimes they could be solving. Like within the context of this movie, of course, we're on her side and we know she's telling the truth and blah blah blah. But it's a bad way to make the commentary, because that if I found out cops were believing stories like that, I would be upset. Like,
no, I get it. When I was watching,
it's not
I'm
Scully
like,
and Mulder.
I get mad when I watch a Dateline and then they're like, "So we called a psychic," and I was like, "I hope you didn't spend taxpayer money on that bull. Like, that's not real."
Yeah. No, I was watching. I'm like, how are they supposed to believe this? Even though we know she's telling
the
truth or what seems very obvious. But you know, then afterwards, she walks by the bathrooms and the door opens and the guy's like, you know, making fun of her and saying she was crazy. And the female officer is like, "Hey, I know you're going through a hard time. Is there anything you need?"
Yeah, like I read it less as the female cop believed the story,
but
as more just like was
hey,
like,
take
"What's
care
up?
Of yourself.
What's up with you?"
Right.
And,
right.
Okay, I'll look into this.
Which that I think is what I appreciated, because
to your
point, I don't think they need to believe stories like that without any evidence, because it does sound crazy. But also not like send the person out. Good luck. Like that was cool the way that she was like,
needs
hey.
To be a little bit of follow up.
Yeah, exactly.
So Ellie, realizing that the police aren't going to do anything, she takes it upon herself to try to find Sandy's last name. And while now she's starting to see these ghosts, these weird gray silhouetted men, but you can't, and you assume that they are the ghosts of the men who abused and attacked Sandy,
mm-hmm.
and they're now attacking Ellie.
Yeah, because it's like the two worlds are starting to merge.
They're starting
she's
to collide
starting
a little.
See.
She's starting to see while she's awake. There's a name for it, I can't remember, but like she's seeing this stuff while she's awake.
So
now
the ghosts all have the
lucid dreams.
I think that's
but
what
that's
it is.
When you can more like you're aware that you're dreaming and you can control the dream.
I was thinking it's like daydream, but that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that's just daydreaming.
So
we saw in her dream before, we saw that Sandy is talking to these men. She keeps changing her name,
right?
You know, and I like how she gives each one a different name, and then there's one guy.
There's one guy
that's different than the others, who you can tell there's something going on. And he's like, "You're too good for this. You got to get out of this.
And this is not going to end well for you." And I do like that she's like, "What are you, a cop?" And she was like, "Doesn't matter."
Yeah.
Like, just.
So you can tell there's a guy there that, is trying to figure something out with this whole ring of what's going on.
She goes to the library and goes through all the microfiche and tries to find. And this is another good little thing where she sees all of these reports of
have we gotten
to
the Halloween thing yet? Is this after
I think this is
where I figured out what was up.
This is where I had an idea, but I was like,
because all the articles she was finding were about
missing men. There's a pastor or there's a teacher or there's all these different
men
that are missing.
And I was like, oh, okay.
Uh-huh.
I see. I was like, oh, we didn't actually see her die mm-hmm. in that flashback.
Nope.
Right.
Which I think is like, we talk about being able to play along. And I think this led you along long enough mm-hmm. and left you all of the clues where it's like, I'm with you.
I don't feel like it's a fatal flaw to the film if you start to piece it together here. Like, yeah. I feel like it's...
No,
it,
there's a lot of good evidence drop where it right. would, you would just skip over it, but then you start to think, oh, I think on a rewatch, when I was driving on the way here, I'm like, I think this is a film that really will benefit from a second
viewing. I think so. Yeah.
I'd like to watch it again and see all those.
The Halloween party is before this.
That's what I'm saying. We need to mention, because that's a big thing.
Yeah.
So they go to this Halloween party, and now every time she falls asleep, she's going into this crazy, like... abuse world,
yeah.
So it's not as romanticized.
This is where the men start
before.
Showing up. Is
yeah,
in this
and it's
party.
Creepy. And in the ghosts of these creepy men who are, you know, having their way with Sandy and doing all this stuff, they're like scratchy faced, blurry.
And they're just gray.
This is a very, all this is good and creepy. It's the stuff in the third act I don't like, but like I think the horror element's really good. It's really scary and creepy and disconcerting.
But the problem is she's been drugged. Right? Like, because you know what? The Halloween party is before the cops, because the cops ask her, had you been drinking? Yes. Had anybody slipped you anything?
No, and, just, you know, and she flat, it's like, no.
And it was like, well, maybe.
Yeah,
like,
we don't know for sure. We don't know. We right. just, Jocasta just handed her an
I
empty
know.
Drink, right? So.
And I think you're supposed to leave that open to, well, did she not? You know?
Right.
But so anyway, she doesn't want to go to sleep because all this creepy stuff's happening. She's being terrorized by these ghosts. And so the kid from her class, who she started to like, she has a friendship, but you can tell he likes her and they're getting along really well. John. This is John.
Yeah.
You know, she's like, come with me. Like,
I don't want to be asleep.
I don't want to be asleep. And so, you know, they go out and they dress up together, have like a couple's costume, and they leave there and they end up going back to the house, which we know there's that rule.
I do. Man, I got to tell you. When she kind of gives him the go ahead that this is that they're gonna hook up, the look on his
he's
face,
he's like, well,
that's exactly right.
That excitement in his,
he was like, oh.
And but I'm like, shut up. The scariest part of this movie is the thought of the old landlady catching them. Right. That was the most terrifying.
Yes.
Because I'm like, she means business.
So this is the scene where they're getting going. She has the vision of Sandy being murdered. And she freaks out hardcore. Yeah. Here comes Mrs. Collins, who, you know, she comes in and assumes.
Open up. She's banging on the door. Who's in there?
Right.
No, you're not supposed to have men in there. And so, but like Sandy has pushed the guy, John, off of her.
Yes.
And she's freaking out.
Yes.
She is just so disturbed by this. And he's like, what's going on? What can I do? What can I, you know what I mean? And then, you know, Mrs. Collins busts in.
Yes.
Get out of here.
Right.
You're lucky I didn't kill
you. Kill you.
And so this guy's freaking out.
And I
got to
tell you.
Out.
On this, on the rewatch, you're like, nah.
Yeah. Exactly. I know. That right. makes
right.
So then, but this is, I think, the biggest.
Well, I love the look on the kid's face because he's, I mean, it's never said, but like you just know that he's just like, oh man, I'm a black guy in a white girl's room.
And she's freaking
out. And she's thinking, and it looks like I'm raping her.
Yes.
Like,
and that is, this is the most problematic thing with the entire movie, I think. The next day. She shows up and he's just like, hey, I'm sorry about last night. Like, what happened? Like, he brushes it off so quickly. And I get he's a nice guy. I get it. But like, she almost literally like got him killed or put in jail. And they just move right on.
Well,
it never comes up. Like, it.
I'm not going to pretend to understand like his side of things. Right. Like he's going to that character's going to have a different view on things. But I think the way I interpret it from this is like he realized that Ellie didn't do that, right? Like Ellie didn't call her or do it. Like, you know what I mean? Like Ellie freaked out.
Yeah,
but like,
but she invited him up to her room and then freaked out on him. Like she's going to get this guy killed or in trouble. Like,
yeah,
it's a problem. Like I get that he's a nice, sweet character. And yes, we know Ellie's a good person. Stuff's going on. But from his viewpoint, the way that they just act.
Yeah,
like,
I think I would think if I was him, I'd be like, you know what? Why don't you just
tap it out.
Stay over there?
Exactly. The way that the relationship is never in peril or troubled at all after that happened without even at least kind of talking about it or something.
But
sure.
I will also say there are a lot of guys that'll eat a lot of sandwiches if they think they're going to get there.
Yeah.
And,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it's just the circumstance. Something about it didn't feel right. I just think they breezed by it. Like just, you know. Oh yeah, well that happened.
Yeah, because he does come up to her the next day, like while she's going through the microphone.
Almost like it almost
like,
felt like
hey,
he was sorry for what happened. Like it just, I didn't
well,
like
I think,
the way that it.
I think that he says he's, which is interesting, right? Because he says, he's like, if I did something, because he has no idea.
Yeah, I think he's, and I think this is human nature. He's trying to figure out, like, did I do something that made you react that way?
I do think that, because he doesn't know what's going on in her head. He just knows that she freaked out.
I know.
In that moment, right? So him saying, if I did something that, like, freaked you out, I apologize. And she was like, you know, and then she says, it's not you, it's not you, it's me.
Yeah.
You know? But while they're going, like Tom said, all of this microfiche about men going missing, and now all
things
of these
are starting to look microfiche.
They start popping up in the library.
Yes, and I think this is a really is another great scene where Ellie is like, "That's it, I'm done. Like, I'm not playing this game." And she's like stalking through the library,
Stacks.
Almost stabs Jocasta.
Scene, this is a heart-stopping moment when she takes these scissors and it looks like she's going to stab a ghost guy. And we all know, we're like, these are people.
Right, right.
She's seen ghosts, but we know there's people in this library. And she swings down the scissors, and like the way that it's cut and with the sound and everything, it's such an impact moment.
It sounds like it went into somebody.
It's like, boom. But so John caught her arm right.
No, he catches the scissors. He's got a hold of the scissors.
Whatever it is, he stops them from going into Jocasta's eye.
Yeah.
Boom. It's a really...
She freaks out. Jocasta freaks out.
Yeah.
Which makes sense.
Just tried to kill me. Like, I mean, she's a horrible person, but yeah, if someone almost stabs you and murders you,
right,
you're going to freak out.
Right. So she ends... So finally, Ellie is going to... She knows in Ellie's head that it's Terrence Stamp. Terrence Stamp is the one that killed Sandy.
She's putting the clues together and saying, okay.
And everything's lying, especially for the viewer, is that everything's kind of lying up, right? Like,
well, someone even says that, like, he used to be a ladies' man.
Yep, yep.
And so he's in the same area. She's thinking the connection. He said to her earlier, like, I know a lot of girls or something. Do I know you? Like, she's just starting to piece together that it's got to be him.
Right. So she goes to the bar. She's supposed to be working. And, of course, the one bartender's like, where the flip have you been?
Yeah.
She goes downstairs. There he is. She's recording the conversation, pours him a beer, and basically accuses him. And he's taken aback, and he was like, what? No? Like, I didn't kill Sandy.
But he also doesn't flat out deny it.
He does not deny it.
So that's the thing where he's just like, he just is very flippant about it.
Yeah. And he's like, if you want to talk to Alex, he mentions another name. Like, Alex killed her. And he's like,
I knew Sandy. Everyone knew Sandy. Right. So he was aware of what was going on. That's what it is.
I gotta tell you, it just clicked in my head.
It was one of her other names.
Alexander. Yes.
Yeah. She was like,
didn't even click
till
I
was like, I'm Sandy. I'm Alexander.
Didn't even click
till
I just said that in my head. That's
Lexi.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Terrence Stamp character walks outside. They're having they're screaming at each other back and forth, and Terrence Stamp ends up, they flip this scene from earlier in the movie.
He Joe Blacks it,
yeah. Where he gets hit by a cab, and the bartender's like, oh, that was Lenny. He used to be an old copper around here, and this is where we realize the person that Sandy was talking to in the booth
was trying,
said,
to, get
trying
out
to get
her
out
of that
out
life
was Terrence Stamp.
So he was a good guy, just very hardened by all the years of seeing this stuff, and to where
he was like a copper in this district, and he was trying to, you know, he's seen a lot. In
but
this
you know
area.
The way he comes off is not super friendly, but he's seen some stuff, right? So you're supposed to think, oh, he's Matt Smith.
I like how the cop is played, because he wants to help these girls, but he also doesn't have a very high opinion of these girls.
Correct.
Like, and which is, I think, what a vice cop would turn into, especially one from that era.
Yeah.
But he's basically like, well, I mean, if that's what happened to her, then she was where she wanted to be.
That's where she
like,
wanted to do.
You know, like, at some point, there's only so much I can do. Like, he's basically like, I had the sit down. She blew me off and thought she knew better, and she ended up strung out on drugs or stabbed because she's a hooker. Like, whatevs. Like,
so yeah, way, what more could he do? There's a lot of these people he's trying to help and save, and it's like, I can't just follow one around. And it's like, he tried.
Nobody bats a thousand.
Nope.
Sorry, Sandy.
So
sorry, Sandy.
They find out he's dead, and she's like, oh my God, now I killed the only good person from these flashbacks.
The guy that
was
trying
to
help
people and probably good-ish. Did help.
Ish.
Sure, yeah.
Probably
right.
did help a lot of people throughout the years. Like, I'm guessing
I look
did.
At him like Abraham Lincoln, right? Like, Abraham Lincoln, like, wanted to end slavery. But he was still a racist.
Sure.
Right? Like he was. I mean, when everybody goes on about, you know, abolition, like, if you look at most of the abolitionists, like, they were still pretty racist. They were like, oh, I mean, they're not like white people.
Yeah.
But we don't need to be like that. Like, that was abolitionists, right? Like, they were good for the period they were in.
Sure.
But if you look at them with a modern eye, like, they're still not great.
They're still problematic.
Yeah, right.
So now she's being chased by these guys, right?
They're popping up everywhere.
And she says, that's it. I'm going home. Like, I have reached my limit.
Oh, yeah.
I'm done. I'm going home, Like, I'm leaving.
She calls her Gran.
Yeah, and Gran kind of says,
I'll get you in the morning. She's like,
nope.
That's not going to work.
So John, he's like, I'll take you. She's like, can you give me the train station? She's like, no, I'll take you home.
He's chasing after her because he chased her from the library. And he's like, Ellie,
you've chased her whole movie.
Yeah, he has been chasing her whole movie.
And she's like, I'm right here. I like how they like cross paths. And she's like, oh, here.
Yeah, here I am. So they go to get her stuff and she goes to talk to...
Oh, they got to go back.
So she goes back to talk to Miss Collins. And Miss Collins is like, come on in. And she's like, I'm so sorry. I have to go home. And she was like, oh, you know, you mentioned something about a girl dying up there. She's like, yeah, somebody did die in that room. And this is, of course, after she gave her a cup of tea. That also, like, that poison got out of her system real quick. They never reference. She's like, oh yeah, you're gonna off yourself from the tea. But then, like, and she's and Ellie's acting like she's been poisoned and she's gonna die. But she never gets in an ambulance.
That's the thing, she's running up and down stairs. I thought, oh well, she's gonna die, but they're still gonna somehow. That poison gets out of her system real quick. Yeah, I don't really know. Yeah, that was a little fishy. But unless she just took like a sip. But at this point, I was certain of what was going on, and she gives her a drink. I'm like, well, that's not going to be good.
Yeah. Right. So this is the reveal: is that Miss Collins is her real name is Alexandria Collins.
Yeah. Well, especially when she goes, "Oh, I took your mail by accident. Go look in the pile." I'm like, "Oh, well, it's mail."
Well, there
it's like. Alexandra, Alexi, Lexi, it's all the names she was given.
And it turns out that she wasn't murdered, but she was the murderer. Mm-hmm. So she would take these men back to her room. They would make a move and then she would murder them and slaughter
the Punisher,
them.
I was thinking it's Eileen Wuornos. Yeah.
Like that's who that is, you know? And she's burying them in the walls of the building. So this is where we get a fucking amazing scene. Of like very Shaun of the Dead, zombies coming up through the floorboards, through the walls, through the windows, and just when you think that nothing else, we find out it's a little red herring in the beginning of the movie where she's like that phone doesn't make any other calls except emergency calls.
Yeah.
So it's the one, you know.
Yeah, as soon as she said that, I was like, well, that will play a role.
That's coming back. So we see one of the ghosts kind of like you think it's going to be an aggressive. You know, he's got this very creepy face. And he says, help me, help us, and hands her the phone. And she makes the phone call. At this point, like a cigarette had fallen into like a box of LPs. So now this whole place is engulfed in flames. John ends up coming in and unfortunately gets stabbed in the process. So he's like passed out on the floor.
Because we know that at this point that Ellie's poisoned, and then the guy's there, and she's like, "You liar!" She said she was alone,
right?
And then this guy comes in,
stabs him in the gut.
Oh God, he's gonna get it.
Yeah. And this is there's a moment, which I thought this scene was really cool, where Diana Rigg goes away, and it's Anya Taylor-Joy.
Yeah.
As
when they're up in the room,
and they kind of embrace, and she was like, "I'm so you know." Ellie says. I've seen it all. I know what you went through. I'm so sorry. And Diana Rigg or Sandy says, I'm not going to jail. Like you're out of your mind. Like no way. And she just kind of sits down, like as this building is burning around her, she just kind of sits down, and the building burns and our two main characters get out. And we flash
somehow
forward.
Somehow she's not poisoned and his stab wound isn't fatal.
Yeah.
Those two non-deaths are a little bit like.
I mean, one of them probably should have, either one.
At least. I mean.
John probably should have survived and been like, dude, this was crazy. You are not going to believe what I saw. So we flash forward a little bit and we get to Ellie's, I guess, graduation or project.
Yeah, her like final thing is a fashion show. Her final.
And it's like 60, modern 60s. Clothing. So we see that the dress that Anya Taylor-Joy was wearing, which is a little bit different, and everybody's really proud of her.
But we see that Gran's there, John's there, so he's okay, and you know.
Right, everybody's okay.
Everyone loves the show.
Yeah, it's
great. And they go back to behind the scenes.
And we see Mom in the mirror.
See Jocasta.
Yeah, who's just like, kind of gives her like a middle finger, but also
yeah,
just
I kind of like how she's just like,
whatever.
She's like, yeah, you tried to kill me. Yeah, okay.
Right? You did try to stab me in the face.
Yeah. I was a bee. You tried to kill me. Okay.
Yeah, it's fine. That makes sense. So we do see her mom in the mirror, and there's kind of a moment there And then the last little part is we see Sandy, right. Anya Taylor-Joy, in the mirror as well.
And they're like, oh boy, what's this?
And she does the wink and the little flick of the mirror. And I was like, oh no, I don't need a Soho 2.
So that's where, again, I think it gets messy with the mental health thing. Because, like, what are they trying to say with the way that wraps up is now?
Well, I took it as if she can see the dead, well, Sandy's dead now.
Oh, she's dead now.
Right.
I see. Okay. Because I was like, is she really like, this is a terrible murderer. Is now Ellie, sweet, innocent, good person Ellie that we know, like, going to be somehow.
Sandy's kind of like Dexter, right? She's a terrible murderer, but she's murdering terrible people.
Right.
So it's like you kind of give her a pass.
You do. It's still not right, though. One of those things where you're like, yeah, she was murdering these horrible men, but also, like, she was murdering.
Right.
Period. Like, right. It's just, you know, but I just didn't want. The point is, Ellie is a good person. And the way that it ended with that cute little flick and everything, I'm like, oh God, now that we know what Sandy was doing, what's Ellie going to be doing? You know what I mean? It's like the fact that Sandy
was
still
a prequel to Promising Young Woman.
Right. Now that
this had, like, I thought that, well, it's not that it's a prequel,
right?
But like this
there's
has got
similar
some
themes,
Promising Young Woman vibes big time.
Because in the end, that's what she's doing, but the actual murdering, this is what we thought Promising Young Woman was going to be. Without the twist-a-roos, like, because, I mean, I know we don't find out to the very end, but when we saw Promising Young Woman, we're like, she's killing these guys.
Oh, yeah. For sure. For sure.
Which is why that movie takes such an interesting twist, is she's not killing them. She's actually letting them go and teaching them a lesson.
Right.
Like,
hoping.
This could have been really bad. You're not going to do this again.
Right.
Right.
Right. Man, I love this movie. Like, I thought I thought it looked amazing. I had a lot of fun. Like, this might be one of my favorites of the year so far.
Yeah, it was cool. I think in my review, I gave it a B-. I really liked it. I still think it's solid and worth seeing, but it just left me a little bit at the end. It was just kind of like, I think it was messy with the mental health stuff. Like, they never really put closure on what was it. It's just, she have an ability? Does she have the issues? And they never connected them.
Yeah.
And then I still think when the ghosts popped up, once you could see more of their faces, it just felt a little bit like, ooh. It didn't seem terrifying. Like, it was scarier when they were scratch face and weird music and dark.
Yeah.
You started seeing them during the light, and they were just like there, and it was like, boo. I don't know. It felt almost laughable. Like, I felt like, I think some people, if they were seeing it in a big audience, which I don't think they are for this movie, but
nope,
I feel like they'd be.
Yeah, there was like four people in the theater. Like, I was like, I think I'm okay to take my mask off.
Yeah.
There's like nobody else.
I had two rows to myself. I was like, oh.
Yeah. There were probably nine people in the theater, and four of them was our party. So I was just like, and they were sitting in opposite corners.
Right,
and I was just like, I think
I'm all right.
We're probably okay. Well, I'm going to roll the dice.
This is one of those movies that's going to end up as one of those mid-tier movies that isn't going to make money, which is a shame because, you know, right now it's these, like, the little Blumhouse horror movies that are going to make a ton of money, or the superhero movies, and this is one of those in the middle.
Blockbuster or bust.
Yeah, which is, like, worth a watch, but the audiences aren't going to turn up to see it. I think I saw, the Friday numbers, the My Hero Academia, which is an anime show that I guess they did a movie for.
They've done that before. It's more like a Fandango thing, isn't it? Not a Fandango, but goddamn, the thing where you like when you can see the Met Opera in the theater for a night.
Fathom Events type
Fathom.
Of thing.
Fathom. There we go.
But so like that made almost 3 million on Friday. Last night in Soho made 1.9. So I think the My Hero is tracking to make 9, and Last Night in Soho is like 4 or 5 if it's lucky.
Dang.
So it's just a shame because, again, I think that Edgar Wright's a brilliant filmmaker. Mm-hmm. I think he has a lot to say with this movie. Visually, it's really good. It doesn't always hit its mark, but it's still worth a viewing, and it's going to get just...
It's going to get swallowed up
and
forgotten. Like, that's... I think
if they could have tightened up the supernatural / mental health part, I think they would have had a truly great movie.
That's what I mean. That's the only part that really leaves me feeling cold on it. And I think there are ways, like you said, if they did another pass and somehow could connect those two and just make the reveal more like, oh my God, I have these abilities and that's what happened to my mom. You know, if they somehow just could hammer that home and like make that the reveal.
Like a sixth sense kind of thing.
I think it would have felt more brilliant. It would have been like, whoa, that's crazy.
That's fair. I think that's a fair
and tied it together
sure.
nicely. Yeah. So.
But there's still a lot to like in the movie. Like it's like I said, it's a fun ride. It's just, it could have been next level good.
Do you think he goes to the MCU? Like, we know that
he's already done it. He's walked away.
He did walk away. I don't think at this point.
No, I don't. I don't think the MCU would have him back.
That's probably true.
And I don't think you get another stab at that.
I don't think you do either. I don't think
he showed up. He didn't do what they wanted.
Yeah.
I don't think. Do you think that's fair though? I just think. I think of like. They were so early in the MCU.
Ant-Man's not that early.
It was his was pre Iron Man. His Ant-Man concept
they were
was
developing
like 2006
Ant-Man before
2005
2006. Oh, were they? I didn't realize that. Okay, but
then once it finally got made, it didn't fit with the Iron Man. Like,
gotcha.
So they wanted him to change a bunch of stuff.
Okay, yeah. I feel a little bit differently about him.
That's
kind of like because I was just like, it's MCU, like, you know the deal,
right?
Like,
no,
this was pre-MCU.
The suit
that we see is his, like the suit that they designed for his movie.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So that it's pre Iron Man.
Yeah, but I don't think so. I don't think he wants to make that kind of movie. And
that's
probably
true.
We've talked about this before. MCU is producer as auteur, not director as
for
auteur.
Sure.
And if you don't want to play, if you don't want to color inside their lines, then they don't need you.
They
like
don't
that's
need you.
Not. That's not the place, and that's not the place for you. Like, that's okay. Like, in almost any other movie, its director is auteur. So, like, here's this one place where it's not. Okay.
I would much rather he makes Last Night in Soho than a Marvel movie. You know, I want to see his original ideas. That's why we get this, because he's not making Marvel. Would I love to see that Ant-Man? I really would love to.
I think
to
we saw a lot of it. I think there's a lot of it in there, like the train and the giant bug, and I think all of that stuff is kind of his.
But I would love to see that. But we also have a lot of other talented filmmakers that are making that stuff.
We'll find out next week.
Yeah, we'll see.
Not doing good
at this point. Eternals is the lowest rated on Rotten Tomatoes Marvel movie, and it's teetering between 59% rotten and 60% fresh. So it's going to be very polarizing.
I'm going to say it right now.
How many reviews are really in yet, though?
Like 100.
Oh, okay. I didn't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, they've been for weeks. They've been reviewing it in New York, LA. They've had screenings everywhere. Ours is just really late. But
I didn't know if the reviews were out yet.
Oh,
you know,
there's
with
a lot of reviews,
embargo
yeah.
dates and stuff.
Yeah.
And
no,
so,
they spoiled that. Thank God I muted it, because they spoiled the stupid the sequences at the end.
Oh, I don't know about it. So yeah, don't say.
I know. I'm muted. I don't want anything. I don't know.
I don't know. I can't.
But yeah.
Yeah. So, well, anyway, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin.
Oh, also, sorry. There is Binge Movies. I just did an episode of Binge Movies that just got released. We did John Carpenter's 1990s. So I got the worst of the John Carpenter decades. But that's up on Binge Movies now. Jason asked me to do a guest spot.
You got
spot.
The one with Escape from L.A.?
I sure did.
Yeah. Oh, great.
I also
Rocket
got
to Mars or whatever.
I got no. That was 2001.
Oh, okay.
I
Ghost
got
to Mars.
Memoirs of an Invisible Man. I got Village of the Damned. I got In the Mouth of Madness. And then
I saw people liked
LA.
In the Mouth of Madness.
They do.
Okay,
but
that's
like,
Carpenter.
What?
In the Mouth of
yeah
Madness.
Yeah,
Sam Neill.
Yeah,
am I thinking really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that was Carpenter.
It is.
I haven't seen that in a long time, but wow. Okay,
go back and revisit it. Okay. So I got his 90s, and well, you know. He had a good run in the 70s and 80s. Let's put it that way.
You missed
and vampires. John Carpenter's Vampires.
Ah. Okay. And then.
Oh, and me? No? Is that okay?
Yeah, you're good. Sorry.
Kevin R. Brackett on Twitter.
And his Tom, you can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online, facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. And of course, don't forget our Patreon at patreon.com/Real Spoilers. So that's it for this one. Next time we will tackle Eternals or the Eternals or an Eternal. I don't know what it is.
There's a lot of them.
There's a lot of them because it's Eternal. So thanks for listening. Until next time. Ryan is complicit.
Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice because we already warned you. Better watch out. It's going to ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.